Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, like, I keep saying I can't wait to try, you know, an actual, like, 60-minute, you know, 45-minute climb. You know, there's no mountains around here, but I might go and visit a friend just because I'm like, I want to feel what that feels like.
Hello, I'm Michael Hutchinson, also known as Dr. Hutch, and welcome to Faster, supported by Cycling Weekly. This time, we're talking about the biggest change in bike racing we've seen this century. And it's not on the road, nor in the wind tunnel, nor even on the gravel. If you're a Luddite, it's much more frightening than all of those. It's online.
There's no kind of off season in Zwift. Like, you can race every day, every hour, 365, you know, days. And it's hard for somebody like me who just, like, wants to keep going and do this. And I'm always told, rest is also good.
This show is about esports, and in particular Zwift, which has revolutionized not just where bike racing happens or how it happens, but more importantly, who can do it. Because Zwift is open to anyone from anywhere. By last year, it had up to 50,000 riders online at once and over 2.5 million subscribers worldwide. And Zwift boomed during the pandemic. For a few weeks in 2020, it was the only bike racing you could watch of any sort, with footage of the peloton accompanied by blurry video streamed from phones in pro bike riders' kitchens, often as not complete with random family members wandering in to make coffee, load the dishwasher and ask when on earth they'd be finished, which is just the sort of question you get from any other director sportif when you're having a bad day. And e-racing doesn't happen in isolation. The Zwift Academy is a talent search programme that has already found several pro riders. Chania Erath, a European champ silver medalist, Neve Bradbury, who finished in the top 10 at the Giro Donna, and perhaps best known, the Australian Jay Vine, who's gone on to some high-profile rides for Alpecin de Koenig.
The sheer amount of pain that you have to go through to make sure that you're holding that wheel, because obviously if you are dropped in the first 20 minutes of that bike race, you're outside time limit, you are not coming back. It's very reminiscent of my Zwift racing from last year.
We'll hear from Jay a little bit later in the show, in an interview that, like the others in this show, was recorded a few months ago, and in his case in particular, before he won the World Esports title at the start of this year. First though, I talked to someone whose entire bike racing career has happened online, and whose real-life trophy cabinet is as empty as her online one is full.
Kristen Kolchinski, and I ride for Team 2024 now. It was Team 2020, but now they changed their names, going with like the cycles of Olympics. So I'm also the number one ranked Zwift power rider in the world, female. There's somebody who just snuck by, but she's actually not real. Like, they can't, we all get verified and we have to like use dual equipment and things like that. So this person just is kind of like a fake what?
My first question is like, kind of quite an obvious one. I can see how I ended up doing some Zwift racing, and I can see how someone who rides road races, someone who rides mountain bike races, I can see how you get into Zwift racing. How do you get into Zwift racing if you're basically a non-bike rider?
I grew up in a very athletic family. My brother and my dad were triathletes, so like I always kind of knew about cycling, and you know, my brother would always watch the Tour de France and things like that growing up. And my ex-fiance was a cyclist, and I would travel around with him going to all of his races. And when he came to move to New York City, he was looking for a training tool to kind of keep him, you know, in shape for his upcoming races. So he actually got me into it. He was like, you would love this. I was like, oh, awesome. And I guess at the time, there's like a gym called the Equinox, and they were doing like these pursuit classes, which is you basically are just competing with everyone in the class. And I would come home every week and be like, this girl and this guy. And my boyfriend at the time was just like, Kristen, can you just get a bike already? Like, just get a bike and go outside. So probably shouldn't have gotten a time trial bike as my first bike, but got a time trial bike, and there was really no place to kind of learn in New York for me. So we would drive out to like, you know, Long Island and things like that. And I was trying to understand how to ride this bike, and I was taking it on the grass just in case I fell. Yeah, so that turned into my Zwift bike, because then he started racing on it. He started training, and then I just kind of
I'll pick this up again in a second. When you say you don't really ride outside, we mean you pretty much can't ride a bike, or am I?
No, I mean, like, I can ride a bike, yeah. But the whole, like, I mean,
just
I guess
that kind of bike.
Yeah, I mean, now I have a road bike and I'm riding it outside, but I think there was just too much going on, like going into an arrow position, being clipped in. There was just too much.
we were talking about, yeah. Kind of, yeah, you're getting Zwift bike and...
Well, it turned into my Zwift bike. So at the start of Zwift, I guess I started 3 years and 7 months ago. At first, it was just kind of like a fun thing for me, and I just kind of was doing it, racing here and there. But I probably got extremely serious last year. At the start of COVID, I moved to my parents' house in Long Island, and I thought it was going to be for a few weeks and this and that. I didn't take really any of my stuff from my apartment. And like a month goes by, and my ex, who I'm like best friends with, he said, Kristen, you really should start doing all these Zwift races, you know, because like everyone who can't, you know, go outside, they're doing the CRCA series on Zwift, and you can get on a team and this and that. And I was like, oh, I'm like, that's pretty cool. So I went back to the city, got my bike, got my trainer, and I started riding. And he was trying to talk to a few teams in New York, just seeing like, hey, you know, my friend Kristen, she's really strong, blah, blah, blah. And then this girl, Christina, I did a race with her, and she was like, oh, she could be on my team. So I joined her team. And then I started following some of the pros that I was like, oh, this girl is a pro. Oh, this girl is elite. And like when you on the Zwift Companion, when you start to follow these people, you see what races they're doing. And there was like a whole group of girls, very strong girls, that were kind of doing the same series every Tuesday and Wednesday. So I just started racing, and I started to get some like good results. And for the first time in my, like, since I was on Zwift, Josh had said to me, like, you should probably start, like, let's start training you. Like, let's start looking at your numbers and like where, you know, you want to improve. And I'm not a good sprinter. I definitely have longer power. So we just tried to like work on my sprint, and I was getting better results.
Given you've kind of specialized in this totally, maybe this is something you haven't got a great perspective on actually, but do you think you've got any advantages over athletes who have come from a more traditional road background? Because actually it's quite a different thing. And you know, I find Zwift racing funny, but I wonder if just doing it, you know, doing it as a complete specialism from the beginning, if you think that gives you any advantages.
I don't know if it gives me an advantage over any of the other racers, because they're all doing it. And a lot of them are racers outside. It's something you have to understand, like the drafting and the way that the game works almost, you know, with, I mean, the start of every Zwift race is just the first 3 minutes is going to be go as hard as you can. And you know, even at the start of some of these Premier League races, like people would just get dropped off. Like if you are not like going all out in the beginning, it's hard to kind of get back on with everybody. Also, when we do the team time trials, yeah, you have to kind of understand the way that the game works with the draft. Like, because if you go a little too hard, you'll find yourself like way too far in front, but then the power of the draft behind, they'll just kind of blow past you because they're going at such a high speed. So, but that's the cool thing, because this is all I know. When I go outside before I broke my ribs, I'm like, oh my God, like, this is so crazy. It's so different, but like, I love it. It's just so different compared to what I've been used to. I'm on the highway, like riding, cause they have a big shoulder, and a truck passes me by and I'm like, whoa. And I'm like, now I know why they use the truck draft. I was like, this is crazy. One of my best friends, who I was on her team last year before I became on 2024, she's going to come visit me. And she's like, I can't wait to ride with you. And you like, she's like, I want you to like feel what a draft feels like when, you know, with me in front. And I was like, oh my God. So it's very cool and exciting. Kind of going, I guess, from Zwift and trying to learn outside. It's also been very interesting to see like what numbers I produce on my bike inside, and then like to feel it outside. It's been like really very cool. And I want to go, and I love riding the climbs on Zwift. And so like, I keep saying, I can't wait to try, you know, an actual like 60 minute, you know, 45 minute climb. You know, there's no mountains around here, but I might go and visit a friend just because I'm like, I want to feel what that feels like.
So what kind of numbers would you, for sort of 45 minute climb on Zwift, what kind of numbers are you hitting?
Like my 20 minute is 5.3, but I want to actually, my goal is to get that up this year. We were kind of like working on my sprint for a few months, so I kind of like lost some of my longer power numbers. But I was like, all right, the sprint is not happening. Like, let's just make my longer power numbers like untouchable, so people just can't keep up. My legs don't like to move fast. So I'm like trying to, you know, work on the sprint, and I'm just like, it's not happening.
Yeah, it's like you're describing my track career. That went much the same way. So in terms of training then, what are you doing? Because as you're training at the minute, still based indoors.
Yeah, so I'm constantly getting yelled at for doing too much. Like, I'll get my training plan and I'll go over, and I'm getting yelled at for that. But usually I did just take a 2 week completely off the bike break to kind of get ready for that next kind of block of training. So right now I've just been doing easy endurance and kind of getting my I guess endurance back.
So what kind of length rides are we talking about here?
So I'm usually scheduled for 90 minutes, but I tend to go like on the weekend, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go for 3 hours. Not hard, crazy all the time, depending, on what I'm doing. But like, we'll do, I think this week we have some tempo set up, 2x30s. I'd have to check. My coach, who again is my ex-fiance, but he's amazing. We're best friends. I mean, I spoke to him about like what I want to improve this year. Like, I really want to get my 20 minute power higher, and my 5 minute and 1 minute. But let's see what we've got scheduled today. Again, I'm coming off of a break. Also, like when we were doing Premier League, it was 8 weeks every week, and we kind of had three seasons almost back to back. So I think a lot of people were a little worn out. Because there's no kind of off season in Zwift. Like, you can race every day, every hour, 365, you know, days. And it's hard for somebody like me who just like wants to keep going and do this. And I'm always told, rest is also good. So yeah, there's tempo on the schedule this week, 2x15 at 88%. There's certain like things that he gives me that I'm like, oh, that was so fun. Like, I love over unders. I love like these ladder drills that he gives me. I find it all very fun and exciting. Because like, I've done so much like training with trainers, like weight training and things like that. So for me to actually listen, like, I never kind of listened to him when we were together. So the fact that I'm like listening and just doing the work, and, you know, I think also because he does know me so well, like he knows like what he needs to give me. And when I do go over by like an hour and a half, he's like, oh, that's Kristen. Like, I did Everesting a few weeks ago. Months ago. It was my first time, and I had some technical difficulties with the my electricity going out, but it took me 10 and a half hours. I want to get that time down. I think you can, there was a girl that did it in 7.5 hours, but she chose like the route. I did it up Alpe de Zwift. And I guess the way, if you're really going for the record, which I eventually want to go for, you go just up the radio tower, up and down, yeah.
That's a long time on the that's a long time on the trainer, can I just say 10 and a half hours?
I feel like when I did that, I feel like nothing is as hard. Like when, even things in life, like I'll be like, you know what? This seems hard, but that bike, being on the bike that long, this is easy.
To kind of call back to something you mentioned a minute ago, there's one of the things about Zwift is, as you say, there is a race every hour of every day of every week of the year. There's a Zwift race, some Zwift race or other you could be doing. Do you race a lot? Do you use racing as part of your actual training?
I was racing a lot during the winter, also because I wanted to keep my number one ranked, you know, Zwift power. So like, you have to constantly look for the races to keep your rank up. I really enjoyed, like, during the winter on a Saturday, like there was always the same kind of people that would do the Kiss race. That was like 9:15 in the morning, New York time. And then on Sundays there was another race, that a lot of people were doing. So you would kind of do the races that you were familiar. Well, actually also the quality of the racers, they're always pretty, packed with like some major talent. So I try to find those races, because I feel like you get stronger when you race against stronger people. So like, I would always hop in the guys' races and, you know, like, actually this is really interesting too. In some of these races, like it's very important, like when you are going up the mountain or hill, and then it's going to go down. If you are not on those wheels of those guys, like, goodbye, they're out there because they weigh so much more than me. They just, you won't be able to catch back on. So it's like, I would die. I'd be like, and funny enough, so sometimes my coach would watch my races and he would be on Discord with me and just be like, you have 5 seconds to get back on there or else bye-bye, like wait for the next pack. So it's a good way to like push yourself. So I think during the winter racing, specific races were a part of my training as well. But right now I'm just literally not doing any races. I'm just sticking to my training program.
I must admit, I can see the temptation to race. I found last winter on Zwift, I just logged on every evening and did and looked for a race that was like 50 kilometers-ish. It was going to take an hour and a bit. That was the sort of training I wanted to do. And just went and I did that every night for night after night after night. And it does, firstly, I found I got quite stale just doing that again and again and again. And secondly, I was only pushing the same kind of training buttons over and over again. I wasn't doing kind of the longer steady stuff. And it became quite a bad habit. I can see if you specialize, you know, if you specialize in doing what you do, I can see it'd be very tempting to over race.
I think I was getting to that point. It was becoming almost like, not maybe a little obsessive of just like, oh, now let me see. And right before I took my break, I was hitting numbers that I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, wow. And because there was a series, there was like a Tempest Fugit, like, series that every week I was kind of doing this time trial, and I was like trying to beat my time, like my power each week or my time each week. But it was good training too, because like when you kind of push yourself, I always feel like in the middle of one of those races, like the time trials, you're just like, okay, like you hit this point of like, why am I doing this? And then you just got pushed through.
Zwift seems like a very straightforward way to compete at a very high level. Because I was watching recently the Olympics, particularly the Olympic track racing, with £25,000 bikes and £5,000 skin suits. And it's to compete at a high level there is very expensive and very difficult. And it seems that Zwift's quite a nice way to compete against really genuinely good people at for a fraction of the price and without having to leave home. I mean, I think that's quite a strength.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, with like the convenience of just having it, right here. And like now that I was dabbling outside, I was like, oh man, like the greatest thing about Zwift is like, okay, I'm getting ready for my race or training and like, oh, I want a cup of coffee or like, oh, I have to go to the bathroom. And, you know, I was driving to where I was going to go ride. And I'm like, oh, I have to pee. Where am I going to pee? Like, there's no place to pee. And I also discovered, like, which was amazing, when I was riding. I mean, the Montauk where I am is so windy because there's just water on all sides of you. And I was discovering, like, because when I'm climbing on Zwift in a race, like, I usually will stand. And when I went outside, I was like, oh, wow. Sometimes you don't want to stand because the wind, it's going to like, you're hitting more of the wind. It was so interesting to me. But like, so all these things, I mean, when I was with my ex who also like for 7 years, all I would hear was this about, it'll save me a fraction of time and like aerodynamics. And so like, I've heard all of these things, but now because I'm taking it so serious the past like year, I'm like, oh, that's what he was talking about. Oh yeah, that makes sense. Like so many things. I mean, it's just so funny, like in the past year of taking how when I really started to take it very seriously, like how many things I had to get. Like I was like, because my old bike, it actually broke, but being on the team, I got a team bike and I didn't know that you have to charge up the little chargers. So I get the bike and I'm like, oh my God, is it broken? Like, how do I get it from the big ring to the little ring? And he's like, press both buttons. He's like, did you charge it? And I'm like, I have to charge this thing? So like, there's been so many things that I've learned. But with Zwift racing, like with the Premier League, there was also, you know, they want to make sure everybody is doing it legit and, not cheating. So like you have your smart trainer, and then you also have your dual power, and we have to like send in both of the files, and they actually watch us. We log into a Zoom call so they can make sure that we're the ones, you know, racing. And there's just so much. And at the time, like I also never had a computer. I had to buy a computer. And it's just been like, at the time, everything just seemed like, how do I do this? How do I do that? And I was crying a lot, just trying to figure everything out. And my mom's like, are you having fun? I'm like, yes. I'm like, this is just a perfect example of like, if you really want something bad enough, like it's worth it. And I'm so glad I just kept with it.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So, Zwift can be a career in itself. But what if you want to get out of the digital world and into the real world, where crosswinds are less forgiving and you can break a real collarbone rather than a virtual one? Some of you may remember Dan Fleeman as a pro bike rider from a few years ago. These days, at Dig Deep Coaching, he's responsible for designing the programs that the Zwift Academy uses for talent spotting. I asked him how it all worked.
The stakes are quite high because the winner gets a contract with either Alpecin Fenix or Canyon SRAM. So I guess there's two types of people that go for it. There's the pure Zwifters that, you know, they see it as an opportunity. They're already good at Zwift. But then there's also the people that find out about the program and think, well, I might ride a little bit on Zwift, but I'm not a pure Zwifter. I'm actually a pure road racer, but this is an opportunity to showcase myself. And that's basically Jay Vine last year, who won the Zwift Academy. I think people think he was a, you know, just a Zwift guy who suddenly now riding the Tour of Spain. Well, actually, he was a road racer, and he got third in the Sun Tour the year before. And then due to the pandemic, he didn't have opportunities to race. He was actually planning to go and race in Europe last year, but then he obviously couldn't. So he used the opportunity and grabbed it both hands.
So I guess then the question follows that is, what do, you know, given we've talked about the difficulties you get if you're a real world racer who comes to Zwift, if you are, I mean, maybe Jay's not the best ever example, since you don't get to be third in the Sun Tour unless you're a fairly competent real life racer anyway.
Yeah.
But what do people who are doing that journey from Zwift to real life, what do they find most difficult?
I guess it's a complete flip reversal of what we talked about, you know, the tactics and, you know, the bike riding skills element. That's the hardest. And it was actually, that was the hardest thing for us to kind of vet last year, because due to the pandemic, even the finals was done virtually. So we wasn't on a location. We didn't get to ride with these people. We didn't see what they, you know, we knew their power. We knew they was very strong, but how are they at riding a bike? Can they put a rain jacket on and take a rain jacket off? Can they get water bottles? You know, all these things. Can they corner, you know, basic, simple elements of a bicycle race?
And it's also, I mean, real life racing is generally a fair bit longer, isn't it? Because
yes,
you don't get a lot of 5 and 6 hour Zwift races.
No, I think that's a very relevant point, because I think if you read the forums and all the Facebook groups and things, people are always saying, oh, well, these riders, there's certain riders on Zwift and they're doing the power that World Tour pros are doing. But I always think, well, they are, but they're only doing it for 30 or 40 minutes. You know, there's a big difference.
Yeah, or you know, the World Tour guy might be doing it for, might only be 30 or 40 minutes, but they've maybe done 5.5 hours of 270, 280 watts, the little accelerations, the little rises, the little, you know, it is quite different.
Yeah, and that's where last year Jay stood apart from a lot of the other, because there was 5 finalists in Zwift Academy, 5 male, 5 female. And we got them to do some fatigue rides. So, for example, we'd get them to do a 3 or 4 hour ride outside, and then they'd come in and they'd have 30 minutes to get ready and do, an interval session on Zwift that we made, because we could see what everybody could do when they was fresh, but wanted to do what people could see what people could do when they're fatigued. And that's where Jay massively stood out.
Jay, as you'll have guessed, is Jay Vine, Zwift Academy winner in 2020 and now riding with Alpecin De Koenig. Since the Academy, he's been second in the Tour of Norway, and he was very unlucky not to take a memorable stage win in the 2020 Vuelta. I started out by asking him how his bike riding career had begun and how it had led him to Zwift.
Basically, I started riding to and from high school and in year 12, and sort of then started pretending to ride mountain bikes shortly after that. By pretending, I mean trying to be at the elite level of Australian mountain biking by only doing 6 hours a week. But the races were about 5 hours long. So that's what I mean by pretending. But, you know, after 2 or 3 years of not doing too well at that, picking up a road bike and really starting to commit to structured training, I met the coach that I'm still with now. and we worked up from a 300 watt FTP that I just got by riding my bike every day, all the way up to 430 where I am now.
And what do you weigh, just to give me a grasp of that?
69 kilos.
Okay. That's pretty healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, when I first started, I literally was just out of high school. So, I mean, I was 83 kilos or something like that. It was horrendous. I had no concept of diet or anything like that. So there was over the years, there's been a massive push of more training, more dieting, all that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
And you were clearly riding a lot of road races in Australia.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, 2017, I went from 2017 doing about 3 to 4 sort of state to national amateur level races to 2018 doing my first road nationals, which I didn't finish. I was pulled one lap before the finish, which constitutes a DNF, even though there was no chance of me being lapped or anything. Anyway, but so that was a DNF. But I went from 3 races the year before to, I think I did something like 32 races at state to national amateur level in that year in 2018. Really just trying to get as much experience as I could. And then going into 2019, when we went to over to New Zealand in January to try and, do the UCI racing over there. And then the following year, doing the Herald Sun Tour, which is up until 2020, the start of this year, was my biggest event. I mean, it had four World Tour teams in the actual race and had 2 mountaintop finishes. So, yeah, I've done a fair bit of road racing.
Tell me then about Zwift Academy. Firstly, how does that actually work? Because it's not quite as simple as they have a race and whoever wins it gets a pro contract. I know that. And secondly, how did you end up doing it? Because it's a bit of a sideways zigzag if you're working through a career that involves things like Herald Sun Tour and working your way up there, getting results and getting yourself noticed. So
absolutely.
That's kind of,
if you're following along with like the time scale and the maths on all this, I essentially started my road racing career at 23. So most and everyone that I'd spoken to essentially written me off for turning pro from day dot, because when I picked up a bike at 19 doing my mountain biking stuff, I'd already been told, you've got no hope. You should have started this 12 years ago and have been riding since you were 8 years old, essentially. But after doing New Zealand Cycle Classic and enjoying the process of racing every day, I mean, it was only a 5-day race, but that whole experience to me of traveling, outside, that was my first trip outside of the country. So my first trip overseas was to a bike race. The traveling, it's a slightly different culture, but everything that was involved with it and then the actual bike racing side of it was such an intriguing thing to me that I really wanted to try and pursue it as a career. And everything was sort of proceeding as planned with Herald Sun Tour last year to get some more race starts. We had some race starts for some Asian UCI racing with Malaysia, Japan, Philippines. But the Zwift Academy really, up until last year, had only been for under-23s. So it hadn't even been on my radar to actually pursue the contract through the organization. But with COVID and someone on the Zwift side obviously made the point of, we're going to offer the pro contract with the pro team, not just the development contract with the development under 23 team. We should open this up to elites as well. I knew with the way the world was going and Australia not allowing us to travel, it was the only meaningful way of being able to show my stuff. Because, I mean, the amateur racing in Australia is really good. Like, don't get me wrong, it's not easy, but it just doesn't get the notice that it really deserves. Like, you get more notice by a club Kermis in Belgium that has the right pro riders show up to it than you would at the top amateur level in Australia.
So then how does Zwift Academy work? Tell me what Zwift Academy is, because I sort of know, but actually it'd be much more helpful if you told me.
Yeah, essentially, well, from what I did last year, it was essentially 12 sessions that the whole idea is you're supposed to prove that you've got power capabilities in every zone, essentially, that you can, you know, produce high watts for sprints, high watts for anaerobic, so your 1 minute, 2 minute type stuff, your 30 seconds, and how repeatability of all those different things, all the way down to your longer FTP sort of efforts and how well you can thread all of those together in one ride as well. So an individual workout, they call them a workout, but really if you're going for the actual contract, you want to be hitting your best numbers in that workout. You're not actually wanting to be...
It's not the revision, it's the exam.
Correct. It's not you're not actually wanting to show improvement in the workout. You're wanting to be showing that you're the best in that workout. And obviously there's a breakdown between watts per kilo and absolute watts. And that's something that the selectors obviously take into account. They're not, if Alpecin are sort of after a lead out guy to do the last from 5Ks to 3Ks, they're not going to select me. Even though I've done that job a little bit this year, I'm not the ideal rider to do that. They want someone with probably an extra 10 kilos.
You're going to say you're 10 kilos too small.
Who can actually do the watts without getting out of the saddle. So there's a bit of differentiation in that. But essentially, you go through the 12 sessions. You know, there's 8 sessions where we're looking at one particular task, which is your sprint or your VO2 or your FTP. And then there's 3 to 4 sessions where we're combining all those things together to see how you can recover after doing maximal efforts and how those maximal efforts affect your other zones afterwards. So basically we're trying to see if you can ride for more than 3 hours.
Yeah. That's, and there's not, is there much actual racing in this, or is it based around the workouts?
There was 2 races that I did. One which was essentially just an FTP test. We went up the Von 2 climb, which was, I think, 45 minutes or something like that. And on Zwift, it's climbing in Zwift is just a watts per kilo test. So just put your head down and do the watts that you can do. There was also a race that we did on a flatter course. And I mean, if you're strong enough and you get the correct time, like the correct race with not much competition, it becomes another watts per kilo test. So the racing, I don't think really did much of the selection process, because I mean, you didn't just have to do one race either. So if you didn't win the first race, you could always sign up to another race in 6 hours time and win the next one. So I don't think that really played much into it. I think it was mainly how the watts sort of played out across the race, and if there was a obvious drop off at the end and stuff like that. But after that, then it got to the real exciting bit, which was the finals, which I thought were quite difficult mentally, in the sense that there was no feedback. So, I mean, in previous finals, everyone's flown out to the same place and everyone gets the same Everyone stands next to each other and they do the tests. You know, they do the sprint test next to each other. You know, even if they're doing an FTP test on a trainer, it's right next to the other person. So there's always that competition of just go until the person next to you stops, you know, then you know you've won. But there was, in this, there was no feedback. So it was really a mental challenge of you've got to go to your limit and then go a little bit more just to hope that it was better than everyone else in the final. You know, we all had the same equipment, so we all got sent the exact same trainers by Zwift, so that, you know, brand new out of the box. So theoretically, they were all exactly the same. We all had to do a proof of weight to make sure that we weren't, obviously, it's about 5%. That'll do, you know. It's 3 kilos, that'll be fine. But yeah, apart from that, we were just left to do the sessions yeah. by ourselves. And one of the hardest session that they did was they took the final hour of Matthew van der Poel's Amstel Gold winning race in 2019, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
That was the one where he
There was that one.
Yeah, that was the one. Yeah. It was the last hour of that workout tailored to your FTP, which they got the previous day in an FTP test. So there was no faking it. So you obviously went full gas in the FTT test the day before, and then they took that number and applied it to the workout. So it was an incredibly hard work. Like, it started off with a maximum 20-second sprint into a VO2 effort. And I think the first, it was full gas for the first 7 minutes before it finally gave you a little bit of a break. And I just remember, getting 4 minutes in and going, I've got another 56 minutes of this to go. This has got to get easier. But, you know, you keep plugging through and, you know, it's just incredible to think that he was able to do that session after already have completed 4 hours or 4.5 hours of bike racing. Like, that's the sort of level you need to be at to win Amstel. And to have sort of no feedback. I think I got one text message after that that workout the day after saying, congratulations, you did the best workout and the best numbers in the workout, so good job. But that was it.
And that's how you got the contract you've got with Alpes and Fenix, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. In the end, you know, getting the contract, it was still only for 1 year with no guarantee of actually getting an extension, coupled with the... we're in Australia, the team's in Europe. Obviously, something has to sort of move and the team's not going to come to Australia. So, taking a massive leap of faith of sell everything. That way we've got some money to put up for the visas for Spain. Rent an apartment, do all this. I mean, it's December 22nd as well that I'm confirmed to have gotten this contract. So we're 5 weeks out from essentially start of racing in Europe. It's extraordinarily quick turnaround. I was able to get over here for March 3rd. So it was still 3 months in trying to turn around and brown visas.
And that's just not what you need when you're also thinking, right, turning pro in Europe, riding some of the biggest races in the world, it would be a nice time to relax and do a little bit of training rather than, it's not perfect, is it?
Not perfect. And also, you know, like I've got to get there. Like, this is, you know, I'm burning daylight here. We're 3 months in and I still haven't done my race to get another year over here. But, you know, luckily enough, the team put faith in me to do Tour of Turkey, which is, I look back at it, 8 days, it's nothing compared to the Volta a España, but 8 days of racing was like more than I'd ever done before in a row, and stage five being the hilltop was usually when I'm finishing a bike race, not getting into the hardest stage of the race.
So that's a really big step up, just in terms of volume, duration, and probably just the speed of the racing.
Yeah.
It's a really big move to make in one jump.
Absolutely. It was a good starting block, though, because I look back at it and my career this year in Europe has really been good in the sense that Turkey was a longer race, so long kilometers-wise, longer days-wise, but it had not every World Tour team there. It also, not every World Tour team had an interest in the GC, so that removed a bunch of riders out of the equation of wanting to be there on the main pivotal stage. The roads weren't crazy small, so that removed another factor out of the jump to Europe, which I would then have to learn and work out in later races. But it wasn't all just all at once, you know. We're going to put you into Reina Adriatica for your first race, you know.
Yes.
Wet World Tour, Pogacar, like that.
narrow, twisty,
all the World Tour teams all at once.
Yeah.
Like, you can see the progression in my racing. There has been a logical sort of steps in the formula, and I think it sort of gave me the best chance, really.
What are the limitations of it as a talent spotting tool, if you set that aside? Because it's quite a jump from doing kind of the academy stuff to actually rocking up in an Alpecin Fenix jersey at the start of Tour of Turkey or the start of Vuelta a España. Are there limitations to doing it, to looking for talent that way?
Absolutely. I think you can't just be a Zwift rider. And I think I've been a good example of, you need to have background experience in amateur type racing. You need to have shown interest in trying to do some UCI racing, even if it is at 2.2 or 0.1 level. You need to have, you know, at least have some background in doing KOM attempts on Strava, you know. Little things like, you need to have ridden your bike in the real world for more than an hour, done some adventure rides, you know. Have you done that 250K ride from your house to the coast to show that you've got the endurance? Can you thread, you know, 8 weeks of training together that's more than 10 hours a week, preferably up around the 15 to 18 hours a week, back to back to back, because that's what you're going to need at this level.
The route into sort of top level pro bike riding is still very European based. It's going down quite a narrow funnel. The ways you get noticed are quite few and far between.
Absolutely. But I'm not raging against the machine here. Like, I understand it's a European sport. Like, I mean, I think it'd be pretty sad if all of a sudden we started introducing classics in Australia. Like, I do think we've got our five main monuments and our classic season is European based. It'd be disappointing that if we then added more classics in America and classics in Asia, we wouldn't get our shining stars all going to the one race and having those amazing stories. But I do think that we should take notice of the lower level racing in other countries, and I think there's a financial incentive to get better bike riders from around the world. But until teams can actually visualize the financial incentive, they're not really going to want to risk it.
I mean, kind of from a performance point of view then, do the two disciplines, this kind of real world racing and e-racing, do they help each other?
I think there was a few times during the Volta a España that I could have sworn it was people hadn't got the memo that this was a World Tour race, and they thought it was a Kermis or a Zwift race, because it was just full gap. And of course, those were the stages that weren't covered from start to finish. But stage 10, it was the day that Stora won his second stage with the Berg at the end. The first 2.5 hours of that bike race were flat chat. Like, we had Gruppetto forming with 40Ks in, and we raced for another 60 kilometers. It was a 200 kilometer stage, and the breakaway didn't go until 100 kilometers in. That was two Zwift races back to back, essentially. And it was just flat chat, nonstop. I think we raced through the feed zone. That's how long we raced. But it then settled down. It also was 10 days into the bike race, which doesn't really get simulated online. The sheer amount of pain that you have to go through to make sure that you're holding that wheel, because obviously if you are dropped in the first 20 minutes of that bike race, you're outside time limit. You are not coming back. It's very reminiscent of my Zwift racing from last year. But yeah, the time spans in Zwift, which I can completely understand. No one wants to be doing 4 hours on the trainer doing the one race.
I mean, I suppose the other question is, does road racing make you a better Zwift rider?
I think, it depends on what type of road racer you are. So I think Alex Dowsett's done a lot of chats about this sort of thing. It's,
yeah, I coach Alex Dyson, so I've had to sit through a lot of this.
Well, yeah, his experiences with the program have been pretty mixed, I would say. But it's highly watts per kilo based. So if you are a watt monster that doesn't have a very good watts per kilo, you're not gonna have a very good experience with Zwift and the racing side. But and the other thing is, you know, not everyone on the road is going to be the winner. Like there's 99% of races that you start, you lose. You know, it's probably even more, like 99.9% of races you start, you lose. And I've certainly got no chance of racing against Jasper Philipsen in a flat sprint. Like, zero chance. I'm not sure if you noticed, but in that Turkey intermediate sprint, Jasper had to brake to allow me to get those extra seconds. But on Zwift, our sprints almost become comparable because it's watts per kilos based.
Yeah.
And we put out similar watts per kilo.
So in the real world, you're a climber.
Absolutely.
On Zwift, you're an all-rounder.
I'm an all-rounder. And that's where using it as the exception, not the rule, is probably the best way of looking at it. But we both get the same workout. We'd both be knackered at the end with the same sort of result of a super hard, high-intensity workout, perfect for adapting into a more broad exercise regime.
If you wanted to swap to just Zwift racing, I don't think for a second you do. But if you were, would you change the training you're doing? Would you be trying to mold yourself into a slightly different kind of rider? Is there a Zwift type rider you'd be trying to edge towards?
Absolutely, absolutely. Like, I haven't looked at much of the Zwift racing this year, but last year when I was in the aero team, it was quite clear. The ideal Zwift racer was someone who had just enough watts to not get dropped. So probably about, if you could do 5 watts per kilo for the hour, that was sweet. But then you needed a sprint for 20 seconds that was about 14 to 15 plus watts per kilo.
Yeah.
So you didn't need, I wouldn't need to do 20 hours a week of training. I could ramp that right back down and get, and instead of the polarized model, which is 20% intensity, 80%, you know, endurance based, you could ramp that right up to 40% intensity based and just be putting out FTP and VO2 and anaerobic efforts as much as you wanted, whilst losing a bunch of weight as well, because you don't need to survive however long the grand tour was, 90 hours or something. Because once again, as weight drops down and and power goes up, well, you burn a lot more calories with higher power numbers, but it's a lot harder to store all that glycogen with lower mass, because your muscles just can't hold enough glycogen.
Does e-racing stay part of cycling, part of road cycling, in the same way that, you know, cyclocross / road and track / road, do you get e-racing / road, or does it end up being kind of a separate thing? I don't quite want to say like BMX, because that's not terribly comparable, but does it end up being a bit of cycling that actually is populated largely by people who just do that, or is there going to be a crossover?
I don't think so, because if you think about it, a lot of the track endurance guys have come over to the road scene pretty and adapted pretty well. I mean, it's not really, it's slightly different in the sense that yes, you're actually on a bike and you're moving around a track, but you're only turning left. So, you know, and if you're a rider that's only done the individual,
I bet you don't tell Filippo Ganna that he just turns left.
Well, you know, look at that, he's world champion. So it clearly, you know, 4 kilometer, you know,
yeah,
pretty sure he's got the world record in the 4 kilometer, or that was just beaten
not anymore. Ashton Lambie has it.
Ashton Lambie, but you know,
he has held it. Yeah,
no one would tell him that. Oh, you've got no bunch skills because you've only turned left on a track for 4 kilometers. You can't do real world racing. You know, it's very similar to Zwift. You know, things can be taught, and you know, I'm not saying that Ganna just went from riding on the track to winning the world championships on the road. I think there's, you know, once again, there's nuance in all of this, but I think there can be crossover. I would personally like to see if they time the Zwift World Champs a bit better, which I don't think there's been an announcement yet, but I would love to have a Zwift World Champs at the correct time of year, maybe even during June, when everyone has their national champs in Europe, to get more of the guys from the peloton into these races with the established Zwifters. I think it would be interesting to see the pure watts of the peloton go up against the game knowledge that the Zwifters have, plus they've also got decent watts as well. So and then also adding in some extra things, like we're going to take you guys out of your comfort zone and give you a 2-hour race, you know, instead of the 40 minutes that we have been doing, stuff like that. I think there is chance for there to be this crossover.
And that's the thing about Zwift. It's part of cycling now. Partly it's a discipline in its own right. Partly it's a game. Partly it's a tool for athlete development. As Jay says, it works the same way that cyclocross or track riding relates to road racing. The traffic has been two-way, and it's going to keep being two-way. There are some monster athletes on Zwift, and there are some very sophisticated racers there as well. The whole thing is the real, virtual deal. Personally, I've done more racing on Zwift in the last few years than I have in real life. It's been a racing fix I can get by going no further than my watt bike, and that's something that I just love being able to do. My thanks to Kristen, Dan and Jay for talking to me, and my thanks to Cycling Weekly for supporting the show.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.